As I mentioned to you earlier today, last week I had the privilege of attending 7 weddings, 2 l'chaims, and a sheva brachos all in 1 week. It was the first time in my life, I think, that I'd been Masavik Kiddushin at 3 weddings in the same week. So it was a very, very busy week. And I think it was at the 6th of the 7 weddings that I was sitting at the chuppah together with another rabbi right before the chuppah began. And we all had very similar experiences, as everyone like delayed their weddings until June because, you know, that's when they assume COVID restrictions won't be in place anymore, and they correctly assume COVID restrictions won't be in place anymore. So there was just like a ton of weddings. And the rabbi turned to me right before the chuppah and he said, "Do you think it's wrong to be looking forward to the 3 weeks?" And like, you know, I heard it a little bit, you know, like, yeah, just use a little bit of a break, you know, like the 3 weeks begin and the wedding season is over and, you know, you go to camp and things are just a little bit more relaxed and everyone's having a good time, you know, and things are looking on the up and up. You know, COVID's only remaining effect on our lives seems to be that you have to just jump through a lot of hoops if you want to get into Israel. But, you know, other than that, you know, like we're really coming up for air a little bit and we feel like you could breathe again. And then, last week, tragedy struck again. And again, tragedy struck in a way where it disproportionately affected Jewish people. It disproportionately affected the Jewish community. And it's sort of a reminder that there's no real escaping the pranos that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store for us. And, you know, it's we've seen one after the other, one tragedy after the other this year that disproportionately affected the Jewish people. Even COVID disproportionately affected the Jewish people, because the first places that it hit in the United States were the most Jewish communities, were the most, you know, the most tightly packed Jewish communities. And, you know, we've already begun to hear all sorts of explanations of what happened in Miami. You know, how does a 13-story apartment building in the 21st century just like fall to the ground? And we're not talking about a 300-year-old building. We're talking about a building a few decades old. Oh, it had cracks in the wall. It was near the water. It had been sinking for years. It's almost as if, you know, if we could only explain how Hashem did it, then we could be comfortable denying that Hashem did it. You know, if we could just comment, you know, people do this with Kriyas Yamsuf also. If the wind is blowing in just such a way, at a time of low tide or high tide, I don't know the difference, but at a time, you know, where the conditions are such, you know, then it's possible that there would be dry land that would be exposed and you'd be able to go through. Oh, there's an explanation. Oh, so then it's not God. Then it's not an act of God. Then it's not a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And of course, as believing Jews, that's not the way we look at things. We look at things and we see that everything is Me'es Hashem, and we see that our Kodesh Baruch Hu is giving us Yisurin and Peronis that are unprecedented in their nature. These things have never happened before. We don't find that these things typically happen. They're just so crazy. They're so out of the ordinary. And each time, just as we can sleep again at night, just as we can put our head down on the pillow at night, something else strikes. When we convince ourselves that the worst is over, it seems that the Ribbono Shel Olam is coming up with innovative ways to wake us up a little bit. So we don't know, obviously, as you've heard many times, I'm sure, over the course of your life and certainly over the course of the last year or so, year and a half, we don't know why things happen. We don't know exactly even what we're supposed to do precisely, you know, exactly what points of Avodas Hashem we're supposed to be working on. But maybe we could take a look at the 3 weeks period, the Bein HaMitzarim period. The 3 weeks is not a term, it's not a halachic terminology, right? That's, you know, the Shalosh Shavuos, I think makes fun that someone wrote a sefer called the Shalosh Shavuos. He thought it would be a whole sefer about the end of Ksubis, where it talks about the Shalosh Shavuos. There's no such halachic terminology called the 3 weeks, it's called the Bein HaMitzarim. But we look at the Bein HaMitzarim period, and maybe we can find some sort of message about what to improve on, what to work on. So the 3 haftaras that we read during this time period, starting with this Shabbos, are called the Tlasa de Paranusa. These are the 3 haftaras of suffering. And obviously each haftarah contains its own message, but more than containing its own message, in the very first words of each haftarah, you see a different mode of communication, a different mode of describing something or of experiencing something. First we have Divrei Yirmiyahu ben Chilkiyahu. Divrei Yirmiyahu. So Divrei highlights the power of speech. And then you have Shimu Devar Hashem. Shimu highlights the sense of hearing, Shmia. And then on Shabbos Chazon, Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amoz. So we have speaking, we have hearing, and now we have seeing. We have the sense of vision. And it seems that that from one Haftarah to the next, we're highlighting the different ways that people experience things. People experience communication with others through hearing, through speaking, through seeing, and the way we experience anything, really, if we're having a fully immersive experience, we often experience it on all three levels. The way we learn Torah involves using all three of those kochos in learning Torah Hashem. We speak Divrei Torah. Ma ahavti sarasecha kol hayom, hisi chasi. Right? We're always talking in learning. That's the way a Jew is always supposed to be. We're always supposed to be talking and learning. Even when we're talking about other things, you know, just throw in a little bit of Divrei Torah. I just got a call last week from Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky, who called me because apparently I told the story about his grandfather that was absolutely false. That was an absolutely not true story. Someone had told me the story. I repeated the story. I knew it wasn't true and I repeated it, but I thought it was funny, so I repeated the story. So the story was that the story that's not true is that apparently when Rav Moshe Sharer walked into a room, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was sitting there and he stood up for Rav Moshe Sharer. Moshe Sharer was the head of the Aguda. He was a very, very special Jew. He was not the Talmud Chacham of the stature of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky stood up for him. So they asked Rav Yaakov, why you stand up for Rav Moshe Sharer? So Rav Yaakov said that if you're supposed... Rav Moshe Sharer was the head of the Aguda. So he's the one that did all the behind-the-scenes maneuvering in the Aguda, who got to be on the Moetzes Gedolei Torah. So Rav Yaakov said, if you're supposed to stand up for Gedolei Torah, you should for sure stand up for the guy who decides who is a Gedolei Torah, you know, who gets to be a Gedolei Torah. So obviously Rav Yaakov never would have said that. Anyone knows anything about Rav Yaakov knows he never would have said something like that. So Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky called me up to tell me, but I can tell you where the story comes from, because Rav Beryl Soloveitchik used to say that. He used to say that in America, in order to become a Gadol, you just need Rav Moshe Sharer to call you a Gadol. That's a Soloveitchik kind of, sharpness. There's a certain, whatever, it's a style. Not so appreciated in America necessarily, but it's a style. So Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky called me up to tell me the story, and it was a pleasant conversation. He's always geschmack. And then at the end, he said, wait, before we hang up, I got to tell you a gedunk that I had on last week's parsha. You can't hang up without saying a little Dvar Torah. How do you end the... It should be something that's on the tip of our tongues. We experience Torah by speaking and learning, by talking to Dvar Torah. You see a friend you haven't seen in a long time. What do you still have in common? You went to one yeshiva, he went to another yeshiva. So what do you talk about? You know, it's like a little awkward. But if you could talk in learning, if you could say over Dvar Torah something that you're that you've been thinking about and learning, Kasha or something, so then all of a sudden it's as if you weren't apart from each other at all. It's as if you pick up right where you left off. Divrei Torah are always supposed to be at the tip of our tongue. Obviously we listen to Divrei Torah. That's how we receive our Mesorah from our parents, from our Rebbeim, from our teachers. We receive Divrei Torah and we believe part of the very critical part of the learning is Osios Machkimos. We see the words, and by seeing the words it enables us to understand more deeply, you know, how does it work that sometimes when a person is trying to struggle over a Gemara, struggling over a Taisus, struggling over a Maramakom, you know, it's not only, you look at how people deal with it. How do I break through? So very often, the way people break through is not by going like this, not by looking up and just stroking their beard. No, how do they break through? They just look at the words over and over and over again, looking at those words, seeing the words, somehow it breaks through. When a person is experiencing Talmud Torah with total immersion, he's experiencing it on all three levels. He's speaking, he's hearing, he's seeing Divrei Torah. You know, each of the three regalim represent a different one of these. I heard from Ephraim Shapiro a different one of these kochos as well. You know, you have Pesach. Pesach is Pesach. Pesach highlights the koach hadibur that one has. What's the primary night of the primary mitzvah on the night of the Seder is Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Yeah, there are a lot of props and handmaidens to the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Matzah Zol Shema, Marah Zol Shema. Yeah, we have a lot of things that help us in the Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, but the whole thing is speaking. It's all about speaking. And then you have Shavuos. Shavuos is the day of Nasa V'nishma, it's the day. And our koach hashmiya on Shavuos was greater than our koach hashmiya ever was in the history of humanity. When else did regular people hear the actual words of God, hear the actual voice of the Ribbono Shel? Our koach hashmiya on Shavuos was off the charts. It was beyond anything we were ever able to accomplish at any other time in history. That's Kabbalah Satara, that's Shavuos, is Nasa V'nishma. And Sukkot, surprisingly, has like a little bit of an emphasis on the eyes, on what we're able to see, more so than other Yom Tovim. You know, the Medrash tells us that the Dal and Minim represent the different body parts, that the Esrog represents the heart, and the Lulav represents the spine, and the Aravos represent the lips, and they're shaped like lips, and all these are based on the shapes of the Minim. And the Hadassim represent the eyes, and it always bothered me that, you know, we have one spine, and we have one Lulav. You have one heart, so you have one Esrog. You have two lips, and you have two Aravos. And you have three Hadassim, because you have how many eyes? Right? Even on Sukkot, like, there's an extra eye thrown in there. Okay, so every good darshan has their vart as to why there are three eyes. You know, seeing the past, the present, and the future, or whatever. Okay, whatever it is. You know, you have a vart on three of them. But there's something extra with the eyes when it comes to Sukkot. You're sitting in a Sukkot, l'malo mi'chafam, it's possible. Why? Lo sholta ba eina. Because your eyes don't see. You're not able to see the schach. So there's the issue of chazon when it comes to sukkahs. For a person to experience the fully immersive Jewish experience throughout the year, we engage our koach hadibur, our koach hashmiya, and our koach hari'iya. And when we engage in all three, we have this fully immersive experience. You know, we read in yesterday's parasha, Rashi writes that the donkey was, you know, the word shalosh regalim appears like three times within a couple of psukim in yesterday's parasha. And Rashi writes that Bilam, the donkey was telling Bilam, you're trying to uproot this nation, the yoke of this nation, that's chogeg shalosh regalim, that celebrates shalosh regalim. And, you know, all the mefarshi Rashi struggle with the same question. What do you mean, trying to uproot the people who are chogeg shalosh regalim? He's trying to uproot everything. The people who observe shatness, and the people who observe kashrus, and the people who keep to wear tzitzis, and the people who wear tefillin. Why shalosh regalim? But maybe that's the point, that Bilam was trying to remove us from the full immersive three-pronged religious experience. You know, Bilam struggled in all these areas. He was a shasum ha'ayin. He was a person, Rashi says, suma ba'achas me'enav. He was unable to see. He was also, his downfall was that he was unable to hear. Not that he couldn't physically hear, but he couldn't, you know, there's a Yiddish term that doesn't really translate well into English. A Yiddish word called tederher. So what's tederher? Tederher means to hear, but it means hear like the way it's used in the Beis Medrash. Not the word hear the way it's used, you know, in like if I don't think it's I don't think if in American society, if you say I don't hear what you're saying, I don't think people understand that you mean that I hear you perfectly well, I just don't really follow what you're saying, or don't really connect with what you're saying. In the Beis Medrash, that's what we say. I don't hear it. Do you hear what I'm saying? You're screaming it. Of course I hear what you're saying. No, but it means to their hair. Like, have you really incorporated, really internalized that which I'm saying? So Bilam wasn't able to their hair. He wasn't able to hear. And he was the person of the Kalach Hadibur. That was his Kalach. That's what also Rashi in yesterday's parasha, that he had the ability to, that's why he was chosen to curse the Jewish people. That's what he had the ability to do. And he had to see. He had to see all of Klal Yisrael. They had to change his position. He was standing in one place. No, he couldn't see as well. He had to go somewhere else where he's able to see. In order to be effective, he wanted to engage all three kochos, and all three kochos were hurt in some way, and he was unable to be effective. And maybe, one of the messages that we're supposed to take out of the 3 weeks period is a message in how we experience our Judaism. It's a message in how we experience our Yiddishkeit. That our Yiddishkeit has to be experienced in a way where we're fully engaged, where we're fully immersed, where it's not done half-heartedly, it's not done haphazardly, it's not, you know, I happen to be around when there's a minion, so I'll chop a minion there or whatever. You know, we're fully engaged in our Yiddishkeit. Rav Asher Weiss, in his weekly Dvar Torah last week, pointed out a beautiful diuk that maybe everyone else noticed, but I never noticed it before. It's on probably one of the most famous Gemaras in Shas. You know, it's a Gemara that everybody here knows. I remember I once gave a drasha, and I asked Rabbi Maurice Lamb, Zichrono Levracha, to critique my drasha for me and tell me like what I'm doing wrong. So one of the critiques that he had, many critiques. One of the critiques that he had was that I quoted a famous Gemara. I said, a famous Gemara says. And he said, how can you say it? How can you call it a famous Gemara? He said, what if there's someone there that never heard that Gemara before? So now he feels like an idiot. So you've knocked him down, and your job is to uplift people. Your job is not to knock people down. So that was a fascinating insight. But this one, I'm telling you, this one's a famous Gemara. Like if you have to leave camp after this, fine. But this is like is a famous Gemara. The Gemara tells us at the end of Masechus Brachos, Rabbi Akiva was makil ki hilos barabim, and he was teaching Torah at the risk of his own life. So they said to him, are you crazy? How are you doing this? So he said, let me give you a mashal. Okay, here it is, the mashal. There's a fish and a fox. Okay, good. Right? There's a fish and a fox. And the fox says to the fish, hey, what are you doing in the water? What do you look so agitated for? He says, I'm trying to avoid the nets of these fishermen. They're all trying to catch me. So the fox says, why don't you just come out here and we'll live together like our ancestors used to live together instead of staying in the water? And the fish says, what are you, crazy? This is b'makom, and this is my makom chiyus. If in my makom chiyus I can't live in a place where I have no chiyus, where I for sure die, I'm for sure not going to be able to live. It for sure isn't going to be good for me. So that's, the mashal. So if a Jew is immersed in Torah, so to pull ourselves away from Torah, that's for sure we're going to die. For sure we're not going to make it if we pull ourselves away from Torah. Yeah, that's the mashal. We're all familiar with that mashal. There was a pashal diuk that I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one that never noticed it before. Rav Ashwai said, what did the fox say to the fish? He said, come out to the dry land and we're going to live together kishem, just like my forefathers lived with your forefathers. That's how we're going to live on dry land. What kufa in history was he referring to? When was that? When did that happen exactly? That the fish and the fox lived together on dry land? You know, is there something in Darwinian evolution or something? Even in that, it was in the sea, right? It wasn't on dry land. Well, what are they referring to? What's he even talking about that they lived together in the dry land? The marble? The marble was the fox didn't live and it was in the water. What are they talking about? So Rav Asher Weiss said just a Pashut Ha'ara. He said, sometimes when people want to pull us away from Torah, they won't let facts get in the way of their arguments. They'll make up history. And they'll say, oh, a Jew doesn't have to live like that. That's not the way our ancestors lived. But it is. It is the way our ancestors... No, but that's not the way our ancestors lived. Who had to be so immersed? You have to be fully immersed in Divrei Torah. You have to be fully immersed in the water. Who needs to have this full immersion in the Jewish experience? Judaism is nice. You experience it a little bit on the side as you're doing things that really matter, as you're experiencing real life also. Hey, that's the way our Bubbies and Zaydis did it. No, it's not. That's not the way it was. A Jew in Europe who didn't know anything, at least he had a fully immersive experience in his Yiddishkeit. Rav Soloveitchik described growing up where he used to attend a cheder till his father pulled him out because he wasn't learning, he was only learning Tanya. But he used to attend a cheder. He described how they didn't have any, they couldn't afford to like rent a proper room, a classroom for the cheder. So they were in like the back of a carpentry shop. And there was Elia de Stoiler, the carpenter, his name is Elia, who was who would work all day, and they would hear him saying psukim all day as he's making the chairs and the tables. He's reciting psukim, and he knew to time it in such a way that that the pasuk was appropriate for what he was doing with the carpentry at the last makah bepatish on the table. Kol haneshama taluka, right? He knew how to make it work out. Everything he did was avodas Hashem. Everything he did was an experience of connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the facts aren't going to get in the way for people who want to pull us away from that fully immersive experience. But that's what we're supposed to experience. We're supposed to experience Torah and Tefillah and connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam in a fully immersive kind of way, using all of our kochos. And maybe that could be one of our kabbalos for the 3 weeks that when we daven, let's say, when we daven, it's important that we should use our koach hadibur, of course, to speak, but also to be shamea, like the halacha says, that when you say, when you daven, you're supposed to be mashmi al azno in Shmona Esrei. Supposed to be a shmiel azno. For sure, in psukah dezimra, supposed to be a zemer. Zemer means with a little bit of a kol. You don't have to be a kal and stolen chassid and screaming your lungs out, but a little bit of a shmiel azno, to be a shmiel azno, what you're saying, to use your koach hashmiel, it changes your tefillah. It's a different kind of tefillah. It's true, the mekubalim say that Shmona Esrei should not be a shmiel azno, and they say that in the ikvus of the Mashiach, maybe we're more noted toward Kabbalah, but still, the halacha on the books in Shulchan Aruch is that you're supposed to be a shmiel azno, even when you say Shmona Esrei. On the Behind the Bima podcast, Rabbi Josh Brody said that after Shavuos, Rav Shechter was in Boca Raton for Shavuos, and after Shavuos, he was saying how he stood next to Rav Shechter while he was davening, and he wanted to challenge himself to say Shimon Esrei word for word together with Rav Shechter, because you could hear him say it. He says it loud enough that you could, and he says it so slowly, like every word is pronounced so carefully. I remember the first time Rav Shechter came to my shul for Shabbos, we had him daven at the Ashkama minyan, so I told him, look, I know normally like an hour and a half and you're... An hour and a half is Pesukah Dezimra today, okay? Like, we're going to, you know, we're going really slow. So Rav Shechter said to me afterwards, what a beautiful davening you have in your shul. It's so nice. He said, I said Pesukah Dezimra before I came, because normally Ashkenazim minyanim are so fast, but this was so nice. I was able to even say slower than usual. So so he said, he was listening to Rav Shechter, and he said, you know, there was a word I was mispronouncing my entire life, but I didn't realize until I heard Rav Shechter pronounce it properly. You know, that person must be a lazno. That's the way a person is supposed to daven, and to be roa also, to see the words in the siddur, that a lot of times we think that, you know, since I know it so well, it's so shagur b'fi, that it's not kedai to look inside, particularly during Chazar Zashat, it's kedai to look inside. Rav Shechter told me that he was very upset that there were that he finds that so many rabbanim and rabbeim are learning during Chazar Zashat. He said, you'll see that the talmidim very often are not going to have the level of Yerushimayim that they should have otherwise had, because they're being mushpah by people who are learning during Chazar Zashat instead of paying attention to the tefillah. He said when they built the new Beis Medrash in YU, there was one of the rebbeim used to learn during Chazar Shashatz, but the new Beis Medrash had Ezra's Nashim on the top, so the women are able to see down. So one of the Rebbetzins saw that her husband was learning during Chazar Shashatz, and she gave it to him over the head after that, so he stopped learning during Chazar Shashatz. You're supposed to be paying attention to the words, you're supposed to be engaged in the tefillah, to have a fully immersive tefillah experience, and it's a fully immersive Torah experience as well. And just to close with one more idea, and we're going to lead the Kumsitz. I saw from Rav Daniel Gladstein, he quoted an Aruch Lener, a beautiful Aruch Lener. You know, the Gemara identifies the five things that happened on Shivas or Batamus, the breaking of the Luchos and Batal HaTamid, and that the city, the walls of Yerushalayim were breached, and that Nisraf HaTorah, and that Avodah Zarah was placed in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Aruch Lener asks a very simple question. You know, in the Slichos this morning, I was paying attention, we actually said it in order, in the order that it actually happened. But the order that the Gemara says is not the order that it actually happened. Right? The Gemara says the Luchos breaking, okay, that's first, that's true. That did happen before everything else that happened. Batal HaTamid, so Rabbi Shimon's Shita in the Yerushalmi is that happened in Bayesheni, by the Greeks. Rabbi Levi said it was also Bayesheni, but by the Romans. The Rambam holds it was Bayes Rishon, but that's not so clear exactly when that happened. It might have been, in very likely, according to the Tanaim, was in Bayesheni. The city being breached, the walls of the city being breached, that was before Bayesheni. According to the Bavli, on Shivas or Batamuz, it was not when the walls were breached, according to the Bayis Rishon. Bayis Rishon, according to the Bavli, that happened on the ninth day of Tammuz. Not just according to the Bavli, according to the Psukim. But the Bavli says the Pashup Shalom. The Yerushalmi goes against the Psukim. The Yerushalmi says both in Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni it happened on Shivas or Batamuz. So Tos says, it's against the Psukim. So Tos says, no, Yirmiyahu was trying to show that we were so confused we didn't even know what day it was. We were so suffering that we couldn't even keep a calendar anymore, like Jews in the Holocaust, where, you know, they didn't even know what day of the week it was, what day of the month it was. So he Dafka wrote down the wrong day, and that's why to highlight just how messed up we were. But Pashup Shad and Psukim and the Bavli is that this is talking about Churban Bayis Sheni. Bayis Rishon was on the ninth of Tammuz, but it might have been Bayis Rishon according to the Yerushalmi that was Shivas of Tammuz. Nisraf HaTorah is the beginning of the Bayis Sheni period. The Tiferes Yisrael says it was the Sefer Torah Shel Ezra. It wasn't just any Torah. And then they put an Avodah Zarah in the Mikdash. That's by Apostumus in the first Beis HaMikdash, in the first Beis HaMikdash by Menashe, according to one day. So if you hold that it was by Menashe, that the Avodah Zarah that we're referring to in Bayis Rishon, totally out of order. So says the Aruch Lener, it's not describing the order sequentially or chronologically in history of what happened. It's describing how a person loses their sense of connectedness to the Ribbono Shel Olam. First, the Luchos break. First, we break our connection to Torah. We break our normal Siddurim. We're not fully connected to learning. And then, Batal HaTamid. Then, you know, the davening with the minyan. three times a day, where we're connected, you know, on a regular schedule, the sense of consistency, then that goes. After we lose our connection to our learning, we start, we say, oh, well, at least I'll daven with a minyan while I'm on vacation. I won't learn while I'm on vacation, I'll just daven with a minyan. No, that will go also. And then we have nothing to protect us. Then there's a breach, and other foreign things can get in. And once the foreign things can get in, nisraf haTorah. It's not even that that we're not learning Torah, but the Torah that we had starts to become lost as well. And then, ultimately, such foreign matter makes its way into our neshamos that there's Avodah Zarah in the Mikdash. And the place where the Torah used to be, there's Avodah Zarah. And the key is that a person's total immersive experience in Yiddishkeit is never supposed to end. There is such a thing as vacation. Someone said to me, oh, you're going up to Camp Keli, I hope you relax. It's going to, you probably just don't do anything up there all day. So I said, yeah, I say seven shiurim a day, but in a polo shirt. So it's an entirely different experience. Yeah. When you wake up and you see mountains, you know, it's an entirely different, that's how a Jew relaxes. A Jew doesn't relax by not learning. A Jew doesn't relax by the fact that you're here over the course of this, well, is Ben Azman. And what do you mean? You have 3 months of Ben Azman. It's great to be a Jew. You get 3 months of Ben Azman. You can do whatever you want. But you come and continue three siddurim a day to learn. Yeah, you play ball also, and you do chesed with all the campers and whatever. All these wonderful things. But it's the mode or the environment that changes. But our commitment to tefillah, our commitment to Torah, that doesn't change. That stays consistent. We're consistently learning. We're consistently davening, and hopefully we do so in such a way that harnesses all of our different kochos. And when we do that, we harness all of our different kochos for Avodas Hashem. The Ribbono Shel Olam will see that we're fully connected, and Bez Hashem will see an end to all of the pranas, and we'll see all of the Shiva Dinechemta fulfilled in the ultimate Geula and Yeshua that we hope for.